Chapter 15, Interplanetary and Extraplanetary Relationships. The subject of the etheric body of all forms and of the etheric body of the planetary logos is necessarily of major importance in any consideration of the supreme science of contact. It is this concept of sensitive contact which I seek to emphasize as we study the three points, or the three basic concepts, outlined in the preceding section. All such terms as planes, groups, creative hierarchies, and centers are simply word modes of inferring relationship, interplay, and mutual impression between the beings or the lives who make up the sum total of our manifested universe. They are nevertheless signs of our leading up to a planetary synthesis or a planetary integrity of a nature hitherto not even visioned by man. The subject is necessarily one of immense difficulty, for all human beings think in terms of their own contacts and relationships, which are strictly limited and are not expressed in terms of the one life flowing through all forms and all kingdoms, or through all the diverse planetary evolutions, of which you know nothing, and thus creating in time and space a living, intelligent, planetary entity of systemic maturity, qualified by immense attractive and integrating energies, motivated by a supreme purpose, a purpose which is part of the vast purpose of the solar logos, working through the planetary logoi, and therefore responsible for the well-being and progressive evolution of all lives and groups of lives within the framework and the essential structure of our planet. The relation evoked is, as you can well imagine, interplanetary and extraplanetary. These terms mean little to the average disciple, and he has to wait until the initiatory process puts him in a position where he can frankly evaluate the situation. Of the latter stages we can know nothing. Only in the council chamber of Shambhala are these extraplanetary contacts and relationships recognizable. But one basic fact must be grasped, and that is that the medium of relationship and of contact is substance, and the effect of these relationships carried on through this medium is the gradual development and progressive unfoldment of the three divine aspects which all esotericists recognize and of others which the coming millennia will reveal. The contributing factor, therefore, within and upon our planet is what we might regard as the three major centers of the planetary logos. 1. The head center, the dynamic agent of the extraplanetary purpose, the expression of the divine planetary will as focused in Shambhala. This is the energy of synthesis, the source of all planetary life. It connotes essential being. 2. The heart center, the agent of the plan of evolution. This is the expression of divine love, or pure reason, the hierarchy. It is essentially the energy of attraction, the kingdom of souls. 3. The throat center, the agent of all the three aspects in relation to the three subhuman kingdoms in nature, the expression also of the divine intelligence, humanity. This is the energy of active mind and makes humanity the macrocosm of the microcosm, the three subhuman kingdoms. Humanity is to these kingdoms what the hierarchy is to the fourth kingdom in nature, the human kingdom. These are the elements of the occult science, and, for students such as you, contain nothing new. Nevertheless, they need to be seen in their triple relationship if the mode of working of the one life is to be grasped more clearly than is now the case. The aim of the entire evolutionary scheme is to bring these three centers into such a close relationship that the synthesis of the divine purpose can work out harmoniously on every possible, note that phrase, level of consciousness. If this can take place, then the basic thought, the fundamental proposition of the planetary logos, can eventually be disclosed to man. May I remind you of the occult statement that every living being or manifested life, from the planetary logos down to the tiniest atom, either has been, is, or will be a man. This has reference to the past, to the present, and to the future of every manifested life. Therefore, the fact of humanity and of that for which humanity stands is probably the primary and major aspect of the divine purpose. Pause and think about this statement. It is therefore the first clear fact which indicates the measure and the magnitude of a human being, and until two other facts are sequentially revealed to us, it will not be possible correctly to gauge the wider aspects of the purpose of Sanat Kumara. Everything subhuman is slowly moving towards a definite human experience. It is also passing through the phase of human effort and consequent experience, or else it has moved out of that phase of limitation and, through initiation, is drafting human nature into a state of divinity, to use a most inadequate phrase. The keynote, therefore, of the Lord of the World is humanity, for it is the basis, the goal, and the essential inner structure of all being. Humanity itself is the key to all evolutionary processes and to all correct understanding of the divine plan, expressing in time and space the divine purpose. Why he chose that this should be so, we know not, but it is a point to be accepted and remembered in all study of the science of impression, because it is the factor that makes relationship and contact possible, and it is also the source of all understanding. These are most difficult things to express and to enlarge upon, my brothers, and only the penetrating intuition can make these matters clearer to your avid and active intelligence. You will note, therefore, that though we call one of the major centers humanity, yet in the last analysis all the centers are constituted of lives progressing towards the human stage, of those units of life who are at the human stage, and those who have left that stage far behind, but who are endowed with all the faculties and all the knowledges wrought out into human expression in earlier planetary schemes or solar systems, or through our own definite and characteristic planetary life. Because of this uniformity of experience, the art of contact and the science of impression become entirely possible and normally effective. The great and omnipotent lives in Shambhala can impress the omniscient lives and lesser lives in the hierarchy because they share a common humanity. The hierarchical workers or masters and initiates can consequently impress humanity because of shared experience and understanding. Then the lives that compose the human family present the goal to the subhuman kingdoms and can and do impress them because of basic instinctual tendencies which are expressed in the human group but which are latent instinctual tendencies and potential assets in the three subhuman groups. This teaching has always been implicit in the esoteric doctrines, but has not been sufficiently emphasized owing to the point in evolution of mankind. Today, mankind has made such progress that these points can be made effectively. I would call your attention that this was the keynote of the gospel story, the human divine nature of the Christ, relating him to the Father through his essential divinity, and also to man through his essential humanity. The Christian Church gave a wrong slant to the teaching by making Christ appear as unique, though the higher criticism, deemed so shocking 50 years ago, has done much to correct this false impression. The outstanding characteristic of humanity is intelligent sensitivity to impression. Ponder on this definite and emphatic statement. The work of science is, after all, simply the development of the knowledge of substance and of form. This knowledge will make it possible for humanity eventually to act as the major impressing agent in relation to the three subhuman kingdoms in nature. This is humanity's primary responsibility. This work of relationship is practically the work of developing or the mode of unfoldment of human sensitivity. I refer here to sensitivity to impression from or by the hierarchy. The work done through the processes of initiation is intended to fit disciples and initiates to receive impression from Shambhala. The initiate is essentially a blend of scientific and religious training. He has been reoriented to certain phases of divine existence which are not yet recognized by the average human being. I am endeavoring to make clear to you the basic synthesis underlying all manifested life upon our planet, and also the close interplay or relationship which forever exists and expresses itself through the supreme science of contact or of impression. The three great centers are in close relationship at all times, even if this is not yet recognized by the intelligent disciple. An unbroken series of impressions is ever present, relating one center to another and bringing about an evolutionary unity of objective and developing, with exceeding rapidity at this time, a secondary science, that of invocation and evocation. This science is, in reality, the science of impression in activity, and not simply in theory. The first great invocation was uttered by the planetary Logos when he expressed the desire to manifest, and thus invoked and brought to himself the substance needed for his designed expression. That started the chain of being, or of hierarchy. Interrelation was then set up between all substantial units. The more potent and the more dynamic and greater could then impress the lesser and the weaker, until gradually, as the eons swept by, the seven centers were created and were in close, impressionable relationship. Of these seven, we are at this time considering only three. The others we know very little about, for they are largely composed of units of the Deva evolutions, and I would ask you to note the plurality there, and of subhuman lives, working under impression from the head, the heart, and the throat centers of the planetary Logos. Students are apt to make their thinking unduly complicated when they seek to itemize and define, to separate into academic groups and brackets, the multiplicity of energies with which they feel confronted when considering the planetary and the human centers. I would advise you that you think simply, and, certainly at first, in terms of the three major energies as they emanate from some center, become impressing agents, and then are again transmitted or stepped down. 1. The dynamic electrical energy of life itself, or divine potency, of embodied purpose, expressing through evolutionary manifestation the divine will. It might be well to realize that purpose emanates from the cosmic mental plane and is the all-inclusive, synthetic, motivating principle which expresses itself as the divine will upon the cosmic physical plane, the seven planes of our planetary life. This dynamic energy focuses itself through the lives or beings who control and dominate Shambhala. Until the divine purpose has been achieved, the planetary Logos holds all in manifestation through the potency of his will and animates all forms with electric fire. Knowledge of this will and purpose comes to the student who is constructing the Antakarana and who is therefore coming under the control of the spiritual triad, the threefold expression of the monad. 2. The attractive magnetic solar energy, to which we give the quite unsuitable name of love. It is this energy which constitutes the cohering, unifying force which holds the manifested universe or planetary form together and is responsible for all relationships. It is this energy which is the soul of all things or of all forms, beginning with the anima mundi and reaching its highest point of expression in the human soul, which is the constituent factor in the fifth kingdom in nature, the kingdom of God or of souls. An understanding of this human potency comes as a man makes contact with his own soul and sets up a stable relationship with that soul. Then he becomes a soul-infused personality. As you well know, the threefold personality is to the soul what the spiritual triad is to the monad, a clear medium of expression. Most students are, or should be today, occupied with this attractive energy, for until they have mastered the desire nature and have transmuted it into aspiration and soul control, they cannot hope to comprehend the dynamic energy of electric fire. This attractive magnetism is the energy dominating and controlling the hierarchy. 3. The intelligent activity of fire by friction. Students would be well advised to reread A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, where I deal at length with these three conditioning energies. This third energy is the basic energy expressing itself in the three worlds and in the four kingdoms in nature, climaxing its expression in the creative energy of the human kingdom. This energy emanated originally, as far as our solar system and our planetary scheme are concerned, in the first solar system, and is the best proven and the best known energy in manifestation. It is the medium for activity in all forms through which the planetary Logos expresses himself, It is the result of the activity of the divine mind, as that peculiar type of divine energy plays upon and through all atoms and upon all atomic forms. The fission of the nucleus of the atom in the past few years is the outer sign or demonstration that humanity has encompassed the divine mind and can now move on to encompass the love or the attractive nature of divinity. Ponder upon this statement. I know not what word to use but encompass, and it is entirely inadequate. A new and deeper esoteric terminology is badly needed. If you will work with and reflect upon these three fundamental energies and search for their expression within yourself, you will greatly simplify your occult thinking. Let me here make a few more statements which you have perforce to accept hypothetically, but which can nevertheless be substantiated by you if you arrive at an understanding of the law of analogy or of correspondences, and if you will also accept the truism that the microcosm reflects the macrocosm, and therefore each human being is related to deity through essential similarity. Statement 1. Dynamic electric energy entered into our planetary sphere from extraplanetary sources and from a point of definite focus upon the cosmic mental plane. This energy was paralleled by a secondary energy from the sun, Sirius, thus accounting for the dualism of manifestation. Statement 2. This energy expanded outward from its central focus, the center called Shambhala, and in this expansion became the agency which impressed the plan upon the serving hierarchy. The plan is that measure of possibility of immediate importance which the divine purpose can present at any given moment in time and space. Statement 3. This process of expansion set up another focal point of energy, and the heart center of the planet, the hierarchy, came into being. Thus two centers were created and en rapport, which constitutes a major event upon the involutionary arc. To this little attention has hitherto been paid. It coincided with the advent or the arrival of the Lords of Flame from the alter ego of our Earth, the planet Venus. They created the nucleus of the hierarchy, which in that far, very distant time consisted of only 49 members. These were advanced human beings and not souls awaiting incarnation in human form on Earth, as was the case with the vast majority of these visiting solar angels. Statement 4. Alignment between the head center and the heart center upon the involutionary arc was thus set up. Another expansion took place which resulted, as you know well, in the creation of a new kingdom in nature, the fourth or human kingdom. This kingdom was destined to become and is today the third major center in the planetary life. Then another alignment, but one which is still contained upon the involutionary arc, took place. Statement 5. Today an evolutionary alignment is taking place. The planetary center which we call humanity is active and vibrant, and it is now possible to progress along the upward way and create the line which links the lesser with the higher, permitting thus an interplay. Men are rapidly moving out of the human center into the hierarchical center. The mass of men are responding to spiritual impression. Statement 6. At the same time, the heart center of the planetary logos, the hierarchy, whilst it is being responsive to the invocation of the throat center, humanity, is becoming increasingly evocative and is itself attaining a much higher contact and alignment with the head center of the planetary logos. It is therefore capable of receiving a constantly developing dynamic impression from Shambhala. Statement 7. Thus, a great alignment is being achieved through the relationship and the interplay going on between these three major planetary centers. This produces a constant inflow of energies from several different sources, and these energies galvanize these three centers into a new and increased activity. Invocation is arising all the time between these centers and producing a consequent evocation of impressing energies. In these seven statements, you have depicted a pattern of the present planetary work, or the present logoic thesis. An involutionary alignment, a guarantee of future successful alignments, constitutes most ancient history. An evolutionary alignment in which all three centers are involved is constantly producing an interplay of energies as well as a constantly successful impression of one center upon another. Humanity, as the throat center of the planetary logos and the prime planetary creative agency, which modern science demonstrates, invokes the heart center, the hierarchy, and then receives the needed impression which will result in the developing civilizations and cultures, as well as the eventual appearance on Earth of the fifth or spiritual kingdom. The hierarchy, or the planetary heart center, invokes Shambhala, the planetary head center, and the plan, as an expression of the purpose, is impressed upon the hierarchical consciousness. If there is redundancy in these various comments of mine, it is entirely intentional. Repetition serves the purposes of accurate presentation where esotericism is concerned. As the invocative system spreads and a greater alignment is attained, Shambhala, the planetary head center, invokes energies outside the planetary life, and the inflow of cosmic and solar energies will be very much greater. For this, the esotericists of the world must be prepared. It will also produce the advent or appearance of many avatars, bringing with them many and very different kinds of energies to those which hitherto have controlled human affairs and the events and evolution of the other, the subhuman kingdoms in nature. With the reappearance of the Christ as the focal point or the supreme agent of the planetary heart center, a new era or divine epoch will be instituted. The avatar of synthesis will draw very close to humanity, and he will inaugurate the reign of avatars, who will be embodied purpose and spiritual will. They will initiate both the hierarchy and humanity into phases of the divine character, of which at present nothing is known, and for which we have no terminology that could convey the exact facts and nature. All that I am attempting to do here is to give you a general outline of events which may lie centuries ahead, but which will inevitably occur once the Christ is again in physical presence and recognition on earth. HPB speaks in The Secret Doctrine of the three periodical vehicles, referring as he does so to the monad, the soul, and the personality. He is dealing, therefore, with the nine aspects of divinity which connote the nine major initiations and those divine characteristics through which the three major aspects of divinity reflect themselves. In this connection, it is well known to students that the monad expresses itself through the spiritual triad, the soul through the three aspects of the egoic lotus, and the personality through the three mechanical vehicles. It will be obvious to you, surely, that these three periodical vehicles are under the influence or impression of the three major planetary centers, and are therefore finally conditioned by the three major energies to which I referred earlier in this section. I do not feel it to be necessary to enlarge upon this basic relation. It is that which integrates the human soul into the vast general whole and makes the individual an intrinsic part of the sum total. There is one aspect of the science of impression upon which I have not yet touched, and that is the place of the centers as focal points, as transmitters, or as agencies for the seven ray energies. It is known to esotericists that each of the seven centers comes under the influence or is the recipient of some ray energy, and there is a general acceptance of the fact that the head center is the agent of the first ray of will or power. The heart center is the custodian of second-ray energy of love-wisdom, whilst the third ray of active creative intelligence passes through and energizes the throat center. These rays of aspect do find expression through the three centers above the diaphragm and, on the larger scale, through Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity. It is, however, equally true that Shambhala is primarily second-ray as it is expressed, because that is the ray of the present solar system of which Shambhala is a part, and that the first ray, or its dynamic life aspect, is focused in the heart, for the heart is the center of life. The great center which we call humanity is predominantly governed by the third ray of active intelligence. This ray energy arrives at the throat center via the head and the heart centers. I am pointing this out for two reasons which must form part of your thinking as you study this science. 1. All the centers come under the influence of all the rays, and this must surely be obvious in relation to average and undeveloped human beings. Were this not so, such human beings would be unable to respond to first ray, second ray, and third ray energy, for the centers above the diaphragm are, in their case, inactive. 2. In time and space, and during the evolutionary process, it is not possible to say which center is expressing the energy of any particular ray, for there is a constant movement and activity. The center at the base of the spine is frequently the expression of first ray energies. This is apt to be confusing. The human mind seeks to make everything precise, stable, to bracket certain relations, or to assign certain centers to certain ray energies. This cannot be done. At the end of the world cycle, when divine purpose is fulfilled and the evolutionary process has brought about the changes and adjustments needed for the full expression of the will of Sanat Kumara, then the situation will be different, and men will know, as the members of the hierarchy know, which centers express the seven ray energies. It must be remembered also that the rays of attribute shift and change constantly. For instance, humanity as the planetary throat center is under the constant influence of the seventh ray, as is the solar plexus center of the planet. To that sub-diaphragmatic center, I give no name. Though the human throat center is primarily expressing the third ray, there is an interesting situation to be noted in this connection. Two ray energies control this center at this time. The throat center of the average integrated personality is governed by the third ray and is strongly energized by third ray energies, again seven in number, whilst the throat center of the spiritual aspirant, of disciples and initiates below the third initiation, is responding primarily to seventh ray influence, and this is peculiarly the case now as the seventh ray is in incarnation. The rays which are manifesting at any particular time affect powerfully all the other centers as well as the one through which they are normally expressing. This is a point oft forgotten. It is needless for me to point out that as man progresses upon the path of return, he consistently comes under the impression of the center of which he is an integral part, that is, first of all, the planetary throat center, the human family. Then, as a soul, he comes under the impression of the hierarchy, the planetary heart center, and at that point he begins to express the combined energies of the intelligence and of love. Finally, on the path of initiation, he comes under the impression of Shambhala, the planetary head center, and becomes a participant in the divine purpose and an agent of the divine plan. It is therefore literally and eternally true that the same energetic life pours through the planetary centers into and through the three periodical vehicles of the incarnated monad, and finally into and through the three centers in the human etheric body, which correspond to the three major centers of the planetary logos. There is therefore nowhere to be found any basis for separation or any possible point of separation or of essential division. Any sense of separateness is due simply to ignorance and to the fact that certain energies are as yet unable to make adequate impression upon the human consciousness functioning in time and space. The essential synthesis exists, and the end is sure and inevitable. Unity is attainable because unity exists, and the sense of separateness is simply the great illusion. It was in order to hasten the dispelling of this great illusion of separateness in the minds of men, and to bring about the emergence of the basic existing unity, that the New World Prayer was given to men, and its use on a worldwide scale inaugurated. Elsewhere, in The Reappearance of the Christ, I have told you of the origin and the impulsing of the great invocation. Here I am simply placing it before you as a fitting conclusion to this portion of my labor of love in the presentation of truth and as a possible starting point in yours. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.